Damodar Leela is a childhood pastime, and the whole chapter before that is also, chapter 8 is childhood pastimes from his name-giving ceremony onward. Looking inside Mother Jasoda's, looking inside Krishna's mouth, that's described in chapter 8. The glories of Nanda and Yashoda, both, they're super excellent love for Krishna that's unequaled anywhere, and it's so strong it influences everybody else in Braja. The elders in particular, so all the Vatsalya Rasa folks, they even the Brahmanas, they're influenced by, it's like when the Brahmanas, when they saw the two Arjuna trees knocked over and the whole root system pulled out, they said, there wasn't a windstorm, there wasn't an elephant, it wasn't, how did the whole root system of tree get uprooted? I mean, that's like, you need a crane or something, you know, what's the modern way of doing something like that? And the little boys said, well, he did it. We saw it. All of them said the same thing. They told the truth. No one could believe it. They could see the marks of the wooden grinding mortar dragging across the ground from where Jasoda had tied it all up, and then the trees knocked over, and the boys said, and not only the trees knocked over, but these two angelic persons came out of the trees and they said nice things to Krishna and then they went away. Children's talk. But the Brahmanas were thinking, maybe it's true. Because they're discerning. I mean, you know, the cowherd men, Vaishya community men. Not possible. So they didn't even consider it. And the Brahmanas were considering it. We heard this 2 evenings in a row. It's so nice. Our commentators say, like when Indra was trying to put out the forest fire in the Kandava forest, the rain didn't work. Rather, it was served like ghee poured on flame. So we had this whole discussion of the Kandava forest pastime. Anybody here not know the Kandava forest pastime would like to hear it summarized? You all know it. Okay, great. So the opulence of Krishna, sometimes, purposely, everything happened because of Krishna's will. So he willed that the Brijvasis would experience his divinity or his opulence or his Aishvarya, his powers. But when they saw his powers, it served, because normally when one sees, just like when Arjuna saw the universal form, Param Brahma, Param Thaman, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shastra. So, you know, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, that was chapter 10. But anyways, when Krishna shows his opulence, the intimacy seems to diminish. But the intimacy, the sweetness aspect of Braja Prem is so strong. Even when Krishna shows his opulence, it serves not to diminish their intimacy of love, but it inflames their intimacy of love. They even forget his divinity. It just gets withdrawn by his yogamaya potency. So now we're going to hear further after that happened. It's just the beginning of chapter 11. And then Sukadeva Goswami starts speaking right away about other childhood pastimes. So How old was Krishna when the Damodar Leela took place? Who knows? How old was Krishna when the Damodar Leela took place?
I heard you say 3 or 4.
Between 2 and 3. Because the reason, the logic is this. They left at the end of this chapter, they're going to leave Gokul and go to Vrindavan. Too much turmoil. Too many demons. Too much trouble. So, and then when they went to the other side, it was 3 years, 4 months, and that's when he started herding calves. He hasn't done the herding calves program yet. He's still doing his childhood pastimes. It's between 2 and 3. And if you hear these, you know, the description, you'll understand. He's really small. Okay, we're going to begin with Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Brihat Bhagavatamrita is written by Sanatan Goswami. To keep it simple, it's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's going to describe this verse 7, 8, and 9 together. It's from a purport. The ladies of Vraja delighted in witnessing his childhood pastimes, and Krishna further encouraged their love for him by performing antics for their pleasure and by submitting to their commands. This too is described by Shukadeva Goswami in 3 verses. This one is text 7. The gopis would say, if you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat. By saying these words, or by clapping their hands, all the gopis encouraged Krishna in different ways. At such times, although he was the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, he would smile and dance according to their desire, as if he was a wooden doll in their hands. Sometimes he would sing very loudly at their bidding. In this way, Krishna came completely under the control of the gopis. That was 7. Here's 8. Sometimes Mother Yashoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, bring this article or bring that article. Sometimes they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or a wooden measuring pot. And Krishna, thus ordered by the mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, if unable to raise these things, you know, he can lift Govardhan Hill, but he can't lift a pair of shoes. He would touch them and stand there, look at them. Just picture in your mind. Just to invite the pleasure of his relatives, he would strike his body with his arms to show that he had sufficient strength. Text 9. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna exhibited how much can he be subdued by his devotees, his servants. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Brajavasis by his childhood activities. Now this is commentary from Brihat Bhagavatamrita. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna exhibited, I read this, how much he could be subdued by his devotees, his servants. Okay. By these pastimes, Lord Krishna sent a clear message to the Gyanis who think that they know him very well as the absolute truth. Quote, to achieve me through the process of knowledge is not at all easy. Only by bhakti am I obtained. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead is controlled by the love of the devotees in Vatsalya Rasa is described in these verses. So here's text 8. We read it already, but here it goes again. Sometimes Mother Yashoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, bring this article or bring that article. Sometimes they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or a wooden measuring pot, and Krishna, thus ordered by his mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, as if unable to raise these things, he would touch them and stand there. Just to invite the pleasure of his relatives, he would strike his body with his arms to show that he had sufficient strength. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, there's no BBT purport, in order to test Krishna's strength, first the gopis would ask Krishna to bring the wooden shoes. Then they would ask him to bring heavier and heavier objects. In this way, ordered by the gopis, he would stand up, holding the objects over his soft belly. In order to show his expertise, sometimes he would raise his hands up. All the relatives would become joyful. Jiva Goswami, he would raise his arms to show his prowess. Not only did he give pleasure to the gopis, but to the cowherds, Swanam. The word cha indicates all others who knew about his powers. Sanatana Goswami writes, the goal is explained. The gopis, Swanam, or his devotees derive bliss, or prema, pritim, from his actions by making him dance as a child. The word cha indicates some were elder and some were very young girls. Jiva Goswami writes, sometimes being ordered he would carry shoes pressed against his belly. He would raise his arms bravely, giving pleasure to all the cowherds. Not only did he give pleasure to the gopis, but all the cowherds, he gave pleasure to all his cowherd people. Svanam. And text 9, translation reads, two pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees, his servants. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Brajvasis by his childhood activities. And here is Prabhupada's purport. That Krishna performed childhood activities to increase the pleasure of his devotees was another transcendental humor. Rasa. Vatsalya, rasa. He exhibited these activities not only to the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, but also to others who were captivated by his external potency and opulence. Both the internal devotees, who were simply absorbed in love of Krishna, and the external devotees, who were captivated by his unlimited potency, were informed of Krishna's desire to be submissive to his servants. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, not just his relatives, but all the inhabitants of Braja derive bliss from Krishna's childhood pastimes because of his coming under their control. This aspect of himself is shown directly. This aspect of himself he showed directly to those familiar with his Aishwarya aspect, like Brahma and Shiva, because it cannot be presented by explanations alone. Although we're getting the explanations alone. Jiva Goswami writes, the purpose is indicated. He made those who knew about his powers but did not know about the devotee's control over him, he made them understand how he is controlled by his devotees. The word britya, or servant, is used to reiterate the mood of those who know the powers of the Lord. The word swanam is used to indicate those whom the Lord takes as his own family. He produces bliss for all the people of Raja by other childhood pastimes. Sanatana Goswami writes, another goal is mentioned. He showed directly to those who know the Lord, Tad Vidam, that he was controlled by his devotees and no one else. This should be seen as the special cause of his producing priti in others. His actions showed the greatness of bhakti. By other similar pastimes, he produced bliss in all the people of Raja always. Vai means it is well known. The pastimes should be told everywhere. So there it is. Sankirtan. And there are many other pastimes from his childhood. The conclusion concerning all these pastimes was discussed previously. And now we're going to have some fun. This is chapter 11. And the reason I skipped chapter 9 and 10 is I want to do that during Kartik, because it's like there's volumes, because it's such an important leela. But here in chapter 11, because it's a childish pastime, is making reference to chapter 9. So here we go. Chapter 9, text 19, reads, oh, Maharaj Parikshit, this entire universe, with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva, Brahma, and Indra, is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotees. This was now exhibited by Krishna in this pastime. That's the Damodar Leela. And here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's elaborate commentary. Though Krishna possesses all possible powers, he is bound and controlled by prema. This bondage, however, being the most astonishing attribute of the Lord, is not a fault, but a beautiful transcendental ornament in Krishna's personality. Paragraph. By his nature, Krishna is self-satisfied, Atmarama, yet he suffers from hunger. He is aptakama, automatically he fulfills all his desires, yet he is dissatisfied and desirous of prema. Though Krishna is the personification of peace and pure goodness, he becomes angry. Krishna is the master of the goddess of fortune, yet he steals butter like a beggar. Though Krishna instills fear in all through time and death, he flees in fear of Yashoda's stick. Though Krishna travels at the speed of mind, he is easily caught by the firm grip of his mother. Though Krishna is condensed bliss, Sandrananda, he cries in sorrow. Though Krishna is unlimited and all-pervading, he is limited by being tied up. Some extra sound effects this evening. Hare Krishna. All the paragraph. in all these incidents, Krishna was directly revealing to Yashoda his innate quality of being controlled by his devotee. All of this cannot be explained as simply an act or imitation performed by Krishna. Such explanations arise from ignorance and have no proof to support them. Realizing this quality of the Lord Brahma, Shiva, and Sanat Kumar became truly astonished. The Srimad Bhagavatam 10.11.9, now we're back to this chapter. Of course, this is from chapter 9 referring to chapter 11. This verse, to devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees, his servants. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Vrajvasis by his childhood activities. And then he explains the word svavashena. Svavashena means within the control only of his own self. Paragraph, though Krishna is independent, svavashena, where do we see his control? Krishna controls the entire universe, along with millions of powerful demigods, yayedam sarvesham vase. Although Krishna is fully independent, the supreme controller, he becomes controlled by the prema of his devotees. This prema, the essence of Krishna's chit shakti, gives rise to the Lord's highest bliss that has been explained previously. So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the Damodar Leela explanation that is meant to teach us that Krishna is controlled by the love of his devotees. And the reference is from this chapter where there are those that understand his Aishwarya or his power, his majesty, his mightiness, his divinity. And it's to teach us or any such people that we should know that the supreme controller is controlled by the love of his devotees. His Damodar Leela is meant to show that, and the 11th chapter of pastimes are meant to show that. We're hearing it again and again so we can like kind of get it, that Krishna has these two features, the majesty feature and the sweetness feature, the intimacy of love feature, and the intimacy of love is such that Krishna is controlled by it. Now I'm going to go to, it's related, the Damodar pastime that we're all familiar with. You might want to know that Sanatana Goswami wrote commentary on all of those verses, the Damodar Ashtaka verses. So we're going to read his commentary on number 3 from Damodar Ashtaka. And it relates to this text 9. From chapter 11. This is Iti Driksha Lilabir Ananda Kunde, that one. So his translation and commentary. In this way, Iti, to he who perpetually drowns the residents of Gokula in pools of pure bliss, who informs those devotees desirous of knowing his supreme opulence and majesty, that he is naturally controlled only by his loving devotees, I again offer my obeisances with love unto that Lord Damodar hundreds and hundreds of times. And here's his commentary, Dig Darshani Tika. Now the excellence of his guna vishesha, or the attributes of his qualities, the attributes of his qualities, are expressed in this verse, beginning with the word iti. Iti depicts the reason for his coming under the sway of his devotees. And furthermore, iti means by this Damodar Lila. So this Damodar Lila is meant to show the attributes of his qualities. It's, he's being controlled by the love of his devotees. It also connotes Idrishi Bhishcha, by all of Krishna's supremely enchanting childhood pastimes like the Damodar Lila. So it's the Damodar Lila plus. He's controlled by the love of his devotees. The word Svasya indicates his own uncommonly divine pastimes, Lilabihi, by all his sportive pastimes, he drowns all the living beings of Gokula in ecstasy. Then, commentary on the verses, the 11th chapter verses. This is confirmed by many statements of the Bhagavatam, such as the following, and I'm not going to read them, 7 and 8, the clapping of their hands, and please dance, and please sing, and all of that. And he's like a wooden puppet on strings. Sometimes they'd order him to bring shoes or chair or measuring pot. If he was unable to lift the article called for, he would grasp it firmly and, just to please his dear relative, flap his elbows again and again to demonstrate his childish strength. This picture. On the basis of these conclusions of the Bhagavatam, so remember this is Sanatana Goswami's commentary in the Damodar Astaka song that we sing in ISKCON for a whole month. On the basis of these conclusions of the Bhagavatam, it is further stated, Swagosham means all the living beings dwelling in Gokula, Ananda Kunde Nimajantam, he immersed them in a deep pool, brimming with liquid bliss. Ananda Rasamaya Gambhira Jala. Therefore, it is declared in the Bhagavatam verse quoted above, Svanam Pratim Samudvahan. By these actions, he stimulated the complete love of his own dearmost relatives, Preeti. And therefore, the word Gosha additionally means the loud proclamation of his glories. Paragraph. Similarly, the word Sva also connotes either Svasya or Svanam, either his own glory or the glory of the Gopas and Gopis, is proclaimed by these pastimes. In this mood, he personally drowned them in all in pools of bliss. Ananda, Ananda Kunde Nimajantam. And they experienced a very special excellence of supreme happiness. Paramasukha. Paragraph. And furthermore, it is especially noted, tadiyeshita gyeshu means unto those who are attached to knowledge of the Lord's majestic opulence, Aishwarya, and who worship him accordingly, he declares, bhaktair jitatvam, only in front of his own pure devotees does he become totally submissive, being conquered by their loving devotion. Akyapayantam. He has fully displayed this quality for all to see. The meaning is, quote, I willingly become submissive to the control of my servants who are attached to bhakti, but I will never submit myself to those fond of jnana. This is confirmed in the Bhagavatam, 10, 11, 9, one of our verses this evening. Bhagavan Sri Krishna proclaimed to the bhaktas of the universe who are fond of Aishwarya Gyan that he is fully submissive only to his pure devotees. You see these three verses that we covered parallel the third verse of Dhammadharastakam. That's what Sanatan Goswami is showing. Paragraph. The meaning of this Bhagavatam verse is the word tad vidam indicates devotees who are attached to Bhagavat Aishvarya Gyan. Or yet another meaning is tadiyanam suggests that he displays this quality of submission to his devotees only in front of those who are already aware of the prabhava or power of his most dear favorite devotees. He does not exhibit this feature to others. The reason for such behavior is those who are unaware of the special glories of the Vaishnavas and those who cultivate kevala gyan, impersonal knowledge, are unqualified to be presented with the display of the supremely confidential truth regarding devotion and the glories of devotion. Paragraph. In this mood, a further meaning of tad vidam from this Bhagavatam verse 10, 11, 9 quoted above is this word reveals britya vasyata vidam, or those who are unaware of Sri Krishna's quality of submitting to his devotees. Now, in Dhammadharastakam, the word premata denotes, quote, with an excellence of love and devotion. Satavritti means hundreds and hundreds of times. Tam means unto that Ishvara Puna Vande. I repeatedly offer my respectful obeisances. Therefore, the only thing worshipful for me is to offer my obeisances unto the super excellence of the process of bhakti, which brings the Supreme Lord under the control of his devotees. Such a condition can never come about through Aishwarya Gyan or knowledge of his divine majesty. This alone is the method of the devotee offering this special prayer. Thus ends his Sanatana Goswami's Digdarshini Tika on the third sloka of Sri Dhammadharastakam. Then there's part two to his commentary, then we're done. He gives the whole verse again and gives this translation again and adds, now such a Vratamuni glorifies the Lord's supreme position through his unique attributes, iti, driksvali, labhir, etc. The conjunction iti means in this way. It relates the present verse to the Lord's dependence on his devotee mentioned in the previous verse. Therefore, the import is that by showing such dependence from his devotee, he flooded Gokula in a lake of bliss. Alternatively, iti relates this verse to the pastime being bound with a rope. Then the meaning would be, quote, by such charming infancy pastimes, he flooded Gokula in a lake of bliss. This is described in our verses chapter 11, text 7 and 8. Sometimes the Lord, incited by the gopis, would sing loudly and dance at their will like a wooden puppet. Sometimes he would carry a wooden seat, wooden sandals, or another weight as a test of strength, and when unable to accomplish the task, he would toss his arms in defeat at the delight of his kinsfolk. With such activities, he was submerging the residents of Gokula in a deep lake of blissful emotions, as indicated by the words, quote, at the delight of his kinsfolk. We're almost done. Alternatively, Gosha can also mean fame or proclaiming the glory. He would plunge himself in a lake of ecstasy, experiencing the highest bliss upon hearing the glories of his people, the gopis, the gopas, etc. Paragraph. By enacting such pastimes, Sri Krishna also revealed his dependence on his devotees, comma, to scholars who are absorbed in studying his majestic aspects. Quote, behold, I am captivated by the devotees, not by those who pursue the path of knowledge, as shown in the Bhagavatam, text 9. The Lord displayed to the savants of this world his submission to his devotees. Paragraph. He opened this secret to scholars absorbed in studying his godly features, semicolon, alternatively, he disclosed it to scholars who know well the influence of the Lord's associates on him and not to others, because the esoteric bhakti and its glories are not to be revealed to sophists who pursue mere erudition and who are ignorant of the devotee's greatness. Thus, in the cited verse, text 9, the words tad vidam refer to those who are aware of the Lord's bond of affection with his servants. And the last part, Satyavrata then feels like lauding the Lord's unendingly out of love. This glorification should be interpreted as a spontaneous appreciation imbued with exclusive devotion. It is not just awe for the Lord's majestic features. So our in reading all these commentaries night, evening after evening, and morning after evening after morning after evening, some appreciation is starting to emerge that they're all Rasika Bhaktas. And they have their unique way of expressing their deep love for Krishna and deep love for the residents of Vrindavan. Some are more direct, some are more subtle and little bit indirect, but each of them are relishing as they're sharing. And they really want to share this simultaneously the unique position of Krishna's love for the residents of Vrindavan, and at the same time the unique position of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. This is chapter 11. And coming soon is the pastime of Brahma visiting Vrindavan. Because we're hearing here, you know, those that are savants of the majesty of Krishna. Now certainly, Brahma understands all of that, you know, from his Govinda prayers, we know from Brahma Samhita. He's not like ignorant or not knowledgeable of rasa, but his position as the creator of the universe, my gosh, he certainly has to be absorbed in details of opulences and technology. And just share this. One evening this week, we visited the home of Adam and his wife, both of whom are nurses by profession. She does the night shift, you know, in the course of meeting that we found out many things, just like conversation. And I asked her, what's it like? You know, and she said, the last 2 weeks has been really busy. And I said, COVID? And she said, protests. And I said, is it the counter-protesters against the protesters? Or the police against the protesters? She said, number three, it's the protesters against the protesters. They're just in this violent mood, and you know, they harm each other, and then the people come in, you know, in different conditions. And they're like emotionally, you know, not doing so well. And they're physically not doing so well. So it's like, it's extra busy at nights. Cause it's at the end of the day and they're brought into the, whatever the place is, hospital or clinic or something. But you know, one of the main things that I got from her is, it's not only, so a big part of the profession of a nurse is not just how to treat a wound or a medical situation, but how to deal with people's emotions. So I referred to Rambaru, and she was very interested, including this seminar that she's doing, and because, yeah, a big part. I asked her, have you thought of switching to the day shift? She said, I like the night shift because then I can spend more time with patients. Because the day shift, you know, it's like, it's a factory. You just have to move people to the next, the next, the next. And, but it, so she's not so much concerned or dealing with the COVID infected people. It's the nighttime is a other set of people, people with other kinds of problems, like, so a major part is like, what do you do medically? Another major part is, what do you do emotionally? So back to our topic. Are we ready to get back to our topic? Are we channeling on Krishna's pastimes? The special nature of Krishna's pastimes in Braja is where we were hovering around. And so there's a quality of Krishna that he enjoys. It's not one versus the other, but simultaneously. He enjoys bringing happiness to the residents of Braja because of their love for him. And he enjoys forgetting his own majesty and behaving not in a play-like manner, but a genuine manner where he's experiencing happiness of one who's controlled by the love of his devotees. And of course, it's not only true in these childhood pastimes, because that's the section. It's his childhood. So largely, not entirely, but largely it's the adults. The cowherd men and the cowherd women and their affection for Krishna as a child. But the same quality is true as his pastimes evolve. So there's a devotee that's learning to be a teacher. It's a devotee in China, learning to be a teacher of Bhagavad Gita, and they're trying to understand things so they well enough so they can explain it to others. And they were trying to understand Krishna Loka, Like over there, is that where Krishna does his childhood pastimes, and over there is when Krishna does his youthful pastimes, and over there is where Krishna does his other. Because, you know, how do you compartmental? It's a three-dimensional picture of what Krishna Loka is, or what Krishna's pastimes are. And it's not like that. He has unlimited potency, so he can appear in a four-armed form, and the next moment appear in a two-armed form, and then, so it's not just like he's like forever elastic or something. He just has potencies, and he exhibits his potencies according to his own desire. And he can just, you know, switch gears or exhibit this potency and the next moment exhibit that potency, and it's seamlessly done, and it completely changes the mood. And it can completely change his form. So it's not like he withdraws the childhood form, like a child grows. The little child that's in your lap, it's, you know, that little baby body is one day going to be gone, and then it's a, like your son, you know, a little bit larger and a little bit older. So, but it's not like that with Krishna. It's not like that. Ours is a reflection of what he does, but everything is within him, and he can exhibit potencies and withdraw those potencies and appear like this and appear like that, and he doesn't grow. He's just exhibiting different potencies and the forms corresponding to the love of his devotees. That's our teaching. The personality of Godhead assumes or manifests a form matching the love of his devotees. And the love of the parents, so, and the pastimes are eternal. It's not like, okay, the childhood pastimes are over and now it's this one. So how does it work? This was what this devotee, that was the teacher, was pondering. It doesn't fit in time as we know it, in space as we know it. His pastimes are eternal. What's an eternal pastime anyway? Because an eternal pastime means it doesn't have a beginning and an end, but the pastimes seem to have a beginning and an end. Like, you know, he dances and then they clap. And then it's over. He does something else. So it's like it's beginning and an end. Looks like. But it's not. So it's beyond the range of our capacity to understand. Beyond the range of our capacity to understand. We're okay? Okay. Like the discussion this morning, Govinda Mohini's question of, you know, trying to understand, how am I to understand, how am I to deal with things that are way beyond my capacity to understand? There are things that are just beyond our capacity to understand. And we're fine with that. I mean, I don't know anything about electronics, but I'm using a computer. And, you know, I didn't go to college and study, you know, software design, computer technology, computer science, but I can use my computer. Anyway, so there's details and details and details that may not be within our grasp. And that's just fine. As consciousness grows, then we can start to understand things that today we can't understand. And, you know, that yesterday we didn't understand it, today we can understand better. Like one of the questions the other morning was, what's the difference between the soul and the body? You know, newer person. And you know, you can give an explanation of it theoretically, but then what's the realization of it? And that's something that's self-realization. And then to be situated in knowledge of who we really are, while we're going about our activities that are temporary, who we aren't. Which is quite, you know, we can have it notional and conceptual, and then it becomes more mature as we evolve in Krishna consciousness. And these are very high topics, but it's meant to tell us, while understanding more or better about who God is, how great he is, there's something greater than how great God is. And that's the fact that he is controlled by the love of his devotees. And it's not controlled by those who know of his greatness and therefore they love him. But they love him simply because they love him, because he's so lovable. And that's a whole other standard or condition of Krishna consciousness or consciousness. And the Bhagavatam is taking us to that position of consciousness. The Bhagavatam wants us to go there. And acharyas want us to go there. And they're experiencing it and they want to share it. I was just discussing today with one devotee. One of their recent meditations is to try to appreciate better Srila Prabhupada's mood. So he has some discussion about that. Outstanding is his mood of compassion. What was propelling him was he wanted people to be happy. And he knew the very root cause of why they were not happy. And he wanted them to become happy. But they're attached to a misconception of what happiness is. And it's really hard when somebody's attached to a misconception to have them let go of that misconception because they're attached to it. Even though that misconception is the root of their unhappiness. So he would sometimes be very gentle and sometimes very strong, sometimes roar like a lion and sometimes pat like a mother. And you know, he would, according to time, place, circumstance, he would exhibit. But what his interest always was to make people happy. And his life was given to that purpose. And the Bhagavatam is given to that purpose also. It's to bring people to the love of Krishna that's uniquely found in Vrindavan, even beyond Vaikuntha and etc., etc. It's just unique. And to bring people to that experience, even though we're so far away. Janata Agha Viplava. The flow of mercy is unlimited. And how to apply what we're receiving from the Bhagavatam to everyday life. Well, one of the functions of someone who becomes gifted with knowledge is to give knowledge. And when you're giving knowledge, it's not easy because people are attached to ignorance. They're not like, they don't like suffering, but they're attached to it. Like, you know, the world events. We discussed it this morning, the world events. There's so much violence and so much, you know, whatever you want to call it, unpleasantry and animosity, and it's the Kali Yuga is Kali Yuga is dancing on the heads of people. And whether it's this or that or the other thing or the other thing or the other thing, and then it's another thing, and then it's another thing, and then it's another thing. And you know, one graduate student wrote to me, MIT graduate student wrote saying, in circumstances like this, is violence not necessary? You can complain, but you know, is it not necessary? And then speaking of the police file, they're speaking of objecting to abuse of police authority. Anyway, how to understand what's going on and what to do about what's going on. So the Bhagavatam knowledge helps us not just become like peaceful and self-controlled in the midst of all the swirling chaos, but be instrumental to help bring some remedy, at least for people who are able and willing to hear. There's a cooling and soothing effect of transcendental knowledge, because the root of suffering is ignorance. You can't bypass transcendental knowledge to uproot ignorance and suffering. And people's harshness, and then people are harsh, and so they get harsh back, and it goes on. The Vyasadeva saw all this, being Tri Kaligya. He saw what Kali Yuga would be like, and his conclusion was to present the Vedas in a systematic way. The meaning of the word Vyasa, I was asked about it, so I looked it up. It's compiler. It was already existing Vedas, and he compiled it. So his mission was to provide a cure from the age of Kali to make the Vedas accessible so that people could have knowledge. When knowledge is there, it dissipates darkness of ignorance. And the brightest light of all is the Bhagavatam. So we're doing the right thing in this dark age of Kali. Not, you know, living our lives in a cloistered monastery somewhere, or in a cave or something like that, but hearing and discussing the topics of Krishna is beneficial not only for the people in the room. The Bhagavatam teaches it's beneficial for the whole world. We're bringing light into a place of darkness. It illumines the place of darkness. And by illumination of that light that comes from the Bhagavat, then encouraging others to receive some of that light and propagating it in X, Y, Z different ways. Just like yesterday evening, how many sets of Bhagavatams were left at the home?
Four
sets of Bhagavatams, just visiting home. Yeah, so to be instruments of light is the answer. It's the root is darkness of ignorance causes everything. And we can't, you know, we're tiny entities. We can't bring light into the world ourselves. So we can be instruments to bring light to some degree, and more lights means more light. That's Vyasadeva's answer, that's the Vedic answer, and that's our answer. Okay, so let's see if there's some, back to the, besides world events. The sweetest of the sweet is Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And hearing about these personalities and their love for Krishna and Krishna's love for them and how Krishna's reciprocation with them it's nectar and it brings life. It cleanses the heart and it brings life to the soul, spiritual life. It revives one from a diseased condition to a healthy condition, to the healthiest condition. So let's see if there's some discussion.
Guru Maharaj, the same quality of Krishna allowing himself to be controlled by his devotees is spoken about in the Nectar of Devotion. And there we read that Krishna, therefore, rarely awards devotional service. So is that referring to exclusive devotion?
Yeah, devotion means pure devotion.
So the mercy is unlimited and the opportunity is available to everyone, yet there are very few that actually make it? Is that...
Well, you know, there's very few that say that, yes, that reach the stage of perfection, but mitigation starts immediately. Chaita Darpana Marjanam. It starts immediately. And then there's proportionate to. Hardly one knows me in truth. It doesn't say hardly anybody engages in sadhana bhakti, but hardly one knows me in truth. Okay?
So, on the one hand...
There's mercy, on the other hand, there's a long road to go.
Well, on the one hand, it seems, you know, all of us are eligible. And then on the other hand, it seems like, what's the hope for me, you know, if it's rarely awarded?
And... The answer is, it's a process. Don't get, throw your hands up in the air quite yet. there's mercy. And continue. Be, you know, making yourself more eligible to receive more mercy, and the eligibility is your eagerness for mercy. Love is not a one or a zero. So proportionate to. So the mercy is available, and keep going. By cleansing, then the eagerness for more mercy. I mean, this is, if it depends on what's going to happen with, you know, COVID-19 and the festival Holy Name, but your question is part of the theme. At least with you, my intention of speaking about. It begins with yearning, and then the yearning doesn't mean you're there. But your yearning is that's an eligibility, and then the eligibility then requires some enthusiasm to work through our lack of qualification, still remaining enthusiastic because of supported by the yearning. And then that takes a while. And then the spontaneous stage is the mature stage. Okay, so. Anything else? You have something. She's got the online thing. We're to do this to let the online ones come in.
I have two questions, Maharaj. When you were appreciating the acharyas and their commentary of these pastimes of Krishna, you were expressing how they're rasika bhaktas. And then you mentioned something about some of them are directly and some of them it's obvious directly and some not so obvious, it's indirect. I didn't fully understand that. Could you?
Well, it's a little bit like Vrindavan Das Thakur compared to Krishna Das Kaviraj. Vrindavan Das Thakur doesn't give a hoot about his audience. He's just like, Lord Nityananda ki jai! Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai! And you know, just says things. Without, he's an ecstatic devotee. And that's how he expresses himself. And Krishna Das Kaviraj is a Kavi Raj. So he, you know, has a different demeanor of expression. But he's equally ecstatic. Just a different mood of being ecstatic. So it's more apparent, less apparent, but it, Vishwanath is, you know, somewhere closer to Vrindavan Das Thakur. He just says things that are really just filled with rasa. You know, whether his audience gets it or doesn't get it, he just is filled with rasa. And Sanatana Goswami has a different mood. He's, you know, he's vastly learned, but, you know, just read what he's written about this Damodara Leela. Or, you know, his commentaries on Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And the whole thrust of it, it's so elegant and so elaborate and so comprehensive, but it takes you to that place. So it's more evident, less evident, but it's there. That's my point. And maybe I didn't say it so nicely, but...
And this is our means of getting there. It's associating with devotees who actually love Krishna so much.
Yeah. And they're giving us their association through their writings. It's deliberate. They're giving their association posthumously. Knowing that they're going to leave the world, they're leaving behind their association.
The second question I had is perhaps a little, this is on this topic of the social unrest that we're having. And there is...
All over the world.
In our ISKCON movement, well, let me back up. So we've worked on presenting to college students on the intersection between social change and spirituality.
Yeah.
And
that's been your topic.
Yeah. And I actually did one today with a couple of Northwestern students. It's hot. Everyone's into
it. Of course.
Not just for college students, but those who are in that generation, the millennial generation and younger, even in our ISKCON movement, it seems like
they're
making social change is hot. And there's a lot of...
Yeah. So keep going on.
So as a devotee, if I am unable to be peaceful in this circumstance and recognize the real solution is the Bhagavatam versus, you know, getting caught up, you know, and getting caught up with this tide of social change. What's going on and what's the solution?
I'm not sure I understand, or maybe I do understand. I'm not sure I accept. It's not a time to be peaceful. It's a time to be very active. It's the time
is internally disturbed about it.
Okay. The pain of living entities, aside from this, that, and the other, and, you know, take any one of them or collectively put them together and put them in a blender, that they're prompts, sufficient prompts to bring a disturbed mind and people wanting social change. But it's peaking. Maybe it's going to go further or whatever's going to happen. For devotees, it's a really good opportunity to bring the real solution. I mean, Prabhupada came in right in the middle of the Vietnam War and you know, the Hare Krishna movie. What a time that was. And it was peaking. But it showed on the video, there was a lot of violence going on. The people that were objecting to the establishment was the phrase, or the they had different phrases. The pigs, you know, they, you know, it was really revolutionary time. And he didn't just like calm the waters. Now calm down, everybody. We don't need social change, or we don't need governmental change. We don't need policy change. He took the wave and rode the wave and brought it to transcendence. Now some people thought it was a cop out. People in my generation, some people thought it was a cop out. And some people found a solution. But he was energized. More energized than the revolutionaries and the counter-revolutionaries. He had a mission that was greater than their mission. So, I'm not sure what your question is. Is your question how to deal with the students or the millennials that are really animated for social change, and how to interact with them so that you're not like a fuddy-duddy, that you don't get it, and you got to get with the bandwagon and be a social changer person? We stick by our acharyas and the wisdom of our, as much as we can, and go more deeply, because that's where the real solution lies, not the cosmetic social change. It's kind of a no-brainer in one sense. The people that want social change are using violence to get their social change. And those people that are leaders of the social change, the violent way of social change, it's going to be another violence. It's going to be another abuse, because it's rooted in ignorance from the get-go. From the get-go. I saw it and I said, no, thank you. But then what's the solution if it's no thank you? So for the millennials that really want social change, they need to understand how to really bring about social change. Not be, you know, get calmed down and be peaceful. That's not the necessity. The necessity is what's the root. Well, maybe the root's too big, it's, you know, too much to shoot for, or something like that. So let me do my little part. And so when you do, whatever you do, if it's rooted in ignorance, it's going to be more of the same. So somehow that message needs to get through to the people that want social change, whoever they, whether the ISKCON devotee youth, or the college youth, or the millennials in general, or anybody that's in the older generation. Just replace another ignorance with another ignorance. It's not a solution. And how you get through to different audiences depends on the audience. But the principles have to be unwavering principles. And some persons are going to say, so this is Krishna Leela. Shared with me that when she was with the Board of Education so many years ago, the person who was her supervisor flipped when Krishna Leela started taking interest in Krishna consciousness. Do you hear the story? Huh?
Maybe not.
Priscilla, I think, was her name. And, you know, anyway, in the end, Priscilla came to Krishna Leela. My husband has cancer. And you have become a spiritual person. Can you tell me what has helped ground you in your spirituality? She said, it's my teacher and these teachings. Can I meet your teacher? So Priscilla, who was like flipping out that she was involved in, because they're cop-outs. She was the anarchist group. You know, make change. And here are these people banging tambourines and dancing in the street, and you know, they're cop-outs. You gotta make change. You gotta make change. But you know, she missed the target. She became elevated in her education and her worldly profession, but she didn't have the answers inside. Anyway, etc. So the moment may not produce a breakthrough, but light breaks through darkness. Not just goodness, but transcendence. And that's our faith, that's our path. The path of transcendence, the path of self-realization, the path of bhakti. So the bhaktas can use strength if necessary, but they know when to use it, when not to use it. And the strength is towards transcendence. That the world is, you know, it's a really great time to help people who are worked up get it, because they want to see, you know, is that really going to produce the change you want? What's the root cause behind what you're objecting to? If you change that over to something else, is it going to take care of the root problem? And it depends on the people. And some people don't want to hear anything.
This is Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. How important is it to have rasika aspect in our bhakti, hearing, chanting, remembering, etc., to enrich our relationship with Krishna and his devotees?
It's important in the evolution of our Krishna consciousness. It's not something that we're to, you know, put on like a clothing fashion. It's not something cosmetic or external. It's something that's internal that awakens naturally by associating with such persons like our acharyas who have it. And our founder acharya is most excellent because he had it and he knew how to bring it to the world in a digestible form. It wasn't overt. It wasn't too much, but it was there. And so the safe Uttama Bhakta, the safe boat is reading, becoming immersed in Prabhupada's writings and his recorded lectures, and it's there. And as your Krishna consciousness matures, then as we're doing, you know, regularly hearing, it's just like 10th canto morning, 10th canto evening. I think I better switch the channel soon because people may, anyway, go back to canto one or something. Because, you know, we have to be at the lotus feet before we can get to the lotus face. But, it comes, it evolves in time. Okay?
His second question is, if one witnesses beauty, riches, and scientific knowledge in a morally bankrupt individual or a nation, is it because of karma only?
Well, it's choices, but choices are both in actions and the quality with which you act. It's guna in addition to karma. Ignorant choices are impelled by ignorance, not by karma.
This is from Sanchari Mataji. Can sadhana siddha devotees be in multiple pastimes in the spiritual world?
Oh, goodness. Why are you asking that question? Does he have part two?
She has an example, like meaning in Chaitanya Leela at the same time in Krishna Leela, or is that ability?
But that's in the stage of maturity for those who are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they get special mercy. And the answer for the special mercy devotees is they receive both opportunities. And that's sufficient for, you know, that topic.
There is an unrelated question from Rishank, Ranjita Mataji's son. Many times Arjuna addresses Krishna as Madhusudana,
yeah,
killer of demon Madhu, but in Krishna's pastimes there is no demon called Madhu, and they have a second part of the question.
Okay. Should I do the first part? They're connected?
Kind of.
Okay, go with the second part.
The second part is, they read from ISKCON Desire Tree that the Madhu and Kaitava were born from the ear wax of Vishnu. So the question is, how can the ear wax of Vishnu create demons? Vishnu is so pure and transcendental.
Okay, Madhu, so they are related. Madhusudana means the Krishna who is the killer of the demon Madhu, and that's at the very dawn of creation. Now what it says in ISKCON Desire Tree about the ear wax of Vishnu, I don't know. I've never seen, heard, or read anything like that. But whether it's coming from whatever part of or feature of Vishnu, anything comes from, within Vishnu is everything. Within Vishnu is everything. We'll say it negatively. Is there something that exists that doesn't come from the source of everything? So it must be, deductively, that which is the source of everything produces everything. When it includes Madhu and Kaitava. So whatever, from wherever, whatever Madhu and Kaitava, the demons came from, Vishnu is the source. So within Vishnu is everything. And so, over here, there are living entities that use their free will properly. Over there, there's living entities that use their free wills improperly. And Madhu and Kaitava are free living entities, parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, who have used their free will like big time improperly. So that's just part of the use proper or improper use of free will. And the capacity to do so is within the living entity. So where they came from is, you know, not so essential, really, because ultimately whatever part of, whatever the source of everything comes from the source of everything. Where does Kamsa come from? Where does Ravana come from? Where did demoniac nature come from? Everything comes from the same source.
This is Bhakti Priya Mataji. What should the daily routine for a devotee be like?
Daily routine should be very nice. The symptoms of the mode of goodness should be embedded within the daily routine. Rising early, cleanliness, inquiring into the nature of who am I and the nature of the where everything comes from, and doing those activities that are conducive. So we have our standard morning and evening activities that our founder Acharya has given us and all of our predecessor Acharyas have given us. So those things are clear. And then the middle part of the day, if you don't know, you can ask any devotee, as Premananda, she'll tell you what the morning and evening activities look like. And then the middle part of the day, you know, we have our duties, the worldly duties that we do, and we try to do them. What does it look like? We try to do them as an offering to Krishna. We're acting with abilities given to us by Krishna and offering them to Krishna. And the world that we live in doesn't think like that. The world that we live in has a completely different idea. But we go by the rules of the modern world in which we live, and we make our offerings of our activity to Krishna for his pleasure. That's it. Anything else here? Peaceful upstairs? Is it peaceful upstairs? Okay, good.
Radhavalla Prabhu's question. Lord's pastimes exemplify heartful loving exchanges with Lordship and between devotees. So for practicing sadhakas to move from mental platform to heartfelt connection, does it need special mercy of the Lordships?
Well, everything requires special mercy. It requires effort as well. And following by right means, that's part of our effort. But even we make nice efforts, mercy is needed. And even mercy is there, we may be heading in the opposite direction for mercy. So we have to, both are required. Effort and mercy are required. One who strives by right means is assured of success, Krishna says. And the success is Krishna's mercy will come to you. Okay, Prabhupada ki jai.